You've just heard some words of mine, and I wrote them a long time ago, and sometimes when you read those words, I think people don't know how they came to be written. My story is a hard one. It may not be a great love story, I'll let you be the judge of that, but I can tell you it is the story of a great love. I've been called the heartbroken prophet. God allowed me to walk through some things in my own life that taught me about myself, but it even more taught me about Him. My name's Hosea. I lived a long time ago, centuries and centuries ago. It was a good time in my nation in many ways. We had a king named Jeroboam II, and as he led our nation, we did things that we thought we could not do. We were a small people and we were surrounded by other nations, but Jeroboam led us, and under his leadership, our economy boomed. We were the envy of the nations around us. They wanted to make alliances with us. They wanted to be associated with us. That was something we hadn't known before. We knew prosperity. We knew blessing. We knew well-being. It was a good time. Some even talked about it as a new golden age, and they talked about the days of Solomon. I was a young man then, and even as a teenager, I didn't have any trouble walking and seeing what was going on and feeling very differently about it. Because underneath all of those things that looked so good, there was some other things going on. It was a religious time. I mean, people throng to the festivals and to the celebrations. You had to get there early to get a place. And the name of Yahweh was used, and all of the ceremonies and festivals were on. And yet, the Yahweh they talked about wasn't the Yahweh that my father, Ba'iri, had told me about. It wasn't the Yahweh of Moses. It wasn't the Yahweh of Joshua. It wasn't the Yahweh of David. No, this Yahweh was a Yahweh who was so much like the Baals. You could almost not tell when the people were using God's name, but meaning one of those idols' names. As a matter of fact, you could walk into any of their homes and find a little place of idol worship. And you could go into the back of their land and you could find their little shrine built to the Baals. And you could go to the high places and you could find them doing what they were doing down in Ashdod and down in the other Philistine places, imitating their fertility gods, engaging in orgies and sexual practices, and even, God help me, even throwing their children to God Moloch. It was a passion in my heart as I thought about what idolatry was doing to my nation and what my nation was doing to God. And I knew that even though the times were good, this moral rot was eating away at our nation. I looked at the way in which the poor were becoming poorer and the rich were becoming richer. And I looked at the injustice and the things that were being done in the name of Yahweh, the God of Israel, while people's hearts ran toward the Baal. And I had a passion in my heart. Oh God, call me, allow me to be your spokesman. There's more, I guess, than passion for God in the heart of a young man, though. I was about 20 years of age, and I saw this woman. And she captured my heart. She had coal black hair. She had flashing eyes. She had a lively spirit. She had a sense of adventure that there was no boundaries and no limits. And I soon found myself spending as much time as I could with this young woman named Gomer. I found out what I could about her family, about Diblaim, her father, and the others. And as we spent more time together, I began to dream of a future with her. I must say, when I talked to some friends, I heard some things that bothered me. I heard she was a woman with a past. I knew she was attracted to men, and men were attracted to her, and I watched that take place. But we had something special going, and I knew that our relationship would draw her closer and closer. My friends warned me, but I was thinking all of this through, trying to figure out whether I should ask my father to make the arrangement with her father. And all of a sudden, God appeared. I longed for that moment. I'd heard the story of how he had appeared to Moses and how he'd appeared to Joshua and how he'd come to Samuel. And I'd asked that God might give me the privilege of being another Elijah, another Elisha, people who'd served God so faithfully. And Elisha and his school of the prophets, I'd known about them, and I was waiting for God to intervene. I was hoping God would call me to be his spokesman, and then he came. But I need to tell you, even though I was astonished that God would speak to me, what he told me stunned me. "Go," he said. And this wasn't my imagination. This was the God of Israel. "Go. Take an immoral woman, children of immorality, because the land has committed the foulest adultery and turning away from the Lord." I understood the second part. I understood that God had called me to be a prophet when people were running away from God and departing from him and committing spiritual adultery and all of those things. I understood all of that. Didn't understand that part, but I knew he was telling me to marry Gomer. We stood and got married. And even though I'd heard God's voice, I knew my love would hold her. That whatever she'd been or whatever she was deep down, I could keep her pure. I would love her so much she'd never look at another man again. And that's the way it was. I mean, those early years of our marriage were filled with joy, and they were filled with laughter, and they were filled with happiness. We celebrated and enjoyed. Oh, there were times. But every married couple has time. She would look at me and say, "You're not meeting my needs." She would complain to me that we didn't have what others could have given her if she married somebody else. She complained sometimes that she wished she could go down and join the parties and the festivities that the people were having out there in the countryside that people whispered about but didn't talk about. And I was stuck on this Yahweh thing, but I knew that I could hold her. Wasn't quite so happy in what God had called me to do. I'd go and talk to people about their attitudes, about their worship of the Baals, about their sacrifices, about their wrong behavior, about what God had said about the covenant and the promise, and they'd laugh or they'd spit in the ground and say some word about, "Who made you God's spokesman?" I'll never forget the time I held my son in my arms. He looked so much like me. Our firstborn, Gomer's and mine. I could see a little bit of her. I could see a lot of me. And I asked God, "What should I call this child? You've brought me into this marriage. What should I call this child?" And again God told me, "Call him Jezreel." I didn't know how to respond other than when God speaks, you don't question. Jezreel. And he meant God scatters, but Jezreel was a place of slaughter. That was the place that a king named Ahab had maneuvered a man named Naboth out of his vineyard, and he'd been killed there. And then later on, the grandfather of our king, the great-grandfather Jehu, had slaughtered that king's wife, Jezebel, and then he'd sent out orders, and 70 sons of Ahab had been executed, and their heads had been cut off. And Jezebel, that was a place, or Jezreel, that was a place where their heads had been stacked. And oh, I don't know what you had that you would think of a place like that. even though it was the way in which our king had come to the throne or his family had, it was an ugly, brutal place. But God said, call him Jezreel. I'm going to scatter the family of Jehu off the throne, and the kingdom of Israel is going to be scattered. What a name for a little boy. I'd go and we'd walk in the market, and I'd have my son in my arms, and somebody would come and they'd make the comments and they'd ask, what's his name? And I'd say, God scatters. Jezreel. Learned that God had given me that name for that little boy so I could begin to talk about what God was going to do for my nation if they didn't repent and if they didn't turn around. But the looks I got and the attitudes I got as they looked at my son and wondered what kind of person would call his son Jezreel. Gomer wasn't the best of mothers. She began to dress up in finery and leave me with Jezreel and go out. And she'd come back whenever she came back. I began to hear some whispers and snickers when I'd walk through the marketplace. I'd hear her name whispered and I'd hear my name whispered about. There was a distance that grew between us. I could feel it. I don't know how you know these things. I just knew it. But she got pregnant again. Didn't feel as good about this one. I remember holding that little girl in my arms, and as I asked God, what do I call this one? He said, call her Lo Ruchama. Unpitied, unloved. Jezreel was bad. How do you call a little girl unloved, unpitied? Then he said, I'm not going to have pity anymore on the house of Israel. I'm not going to forgive her anymore. I still don't know how I got through that moment. I knew that I wasn't the father of that child. God had told me in his own way. Felt heartsick about our marriage. I didn't know how to change it. I felt heartsick about my nation. It almost looked like the two were mirrors of one another. That seemed to be what God was saying. He was closing his heart, and I felt my heart closing toward Gomer, and then she got pregnant again. Nothing had slowed down about her lifestyle. Nothing had slowed down about the way she was living, and this time as the child grew, I found myself caring for little Jezreel, who was now about 5 or 6 years of age, and little Lo Ruchama. She was busy. Then the little boy would come, our third. I almost didn't want to ask God what to call him. And when he told me, I knew that I'd been right not to want to ask. Lo Ami, not my people, no child of mine. You try telling your grandparents that's what you're going to name your little child. And God said, you need to tell Israel, you're not my people, I'm not your God. I love those children. Pour my life into those little children, but every time I called their name, it reminded me what was going on in my marriage and what was going on in my nation. And it went from bad to worse. came home one day, and there she was, packing all her belongings, getting them all together, and saying, "I'm gone. You have the children. I have my freedom. I'm gone." There was no stopping her. There was no arguing with her. There was no holding her back. She wasn't waiting to be seduced. She was chasing as fast as she could any man who could give her what she thought she needed in life. And she plunged in full bore. I walked the streets and the people would laugh. "The prophet's wife has deserted her. Did you hear about Gomer?" And I heard rumors of her at the temple, down the Baal worship, at the festival. There was almost nothing she didn't seem to want to do, to rub it in my face or just flaunt who she was. Heartbroken. There's a part of me that cried out, "How can I give you up? How can I give you up?" There was another part of me that was angry. This was a shame to her children. It was a disgrace to me. It was a slap in the face of our God. I went down and I did the arrangements for divorce. I went through all of those procedures. I announced in public, "She is not my wife. I am not her husband." And yet, I didn't go through with it. Sent the children. I couldn't talk to her anymore. "Plead with your mother. Maybe you could say something. Get her to stop. Get her to come home. Children, plead with her." But it just cycled, and it was almost as if I was with one set of eyes watching my family and watching my wife, with another watching my nation and watching my God. And Gomer kept going. She kept pursuing these lovers, the lover of the month club. And she was with him, and then as time went on, she began to get passed from one to another, to another, to another, to another. She'd become the woman of the week. I could see it. I could see the way her clothing was getting shattered and torn. I could see her body beginning to waste away. "You're going to think I'm an incredible fool. I still love her. It was a part of my heart that belonged to her." I would go to the store and I'd pick up some of the clothing that I knew she loved. I'd go and I'd go to the market and I'd pick up some of the clothing I knew that she loved, and I'd leave them when nobody could see me at the door of her place she was living. I'd listen as she threw her arms around her latest companion and say, "Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you." And she'd rush off down to the Baal temple to dress in these new clothes and take the food that I'd given to her. And she'd offer it on the altar to Baal and give thanks to Baal for what I'd given her. She was right alongside somebody else who was praising Baal for the crops and for the blessings and for all these good things that God in heaven had given to us. But I did that more than once. But then came the time I just knew, if she wasn't going to be stopped by what she was doing, maybe I just needed to exercise some consequences. She was living in a place I repossessed the property, and she got thrown out. She got in another place. I tried to put up thorns and hedges so she couldn't live this lifestyle, that maybe she'd realize there's consequences to what I'm doing. I've got to stop. And she didn't stop. Finally had nothing, and she literally sold herself as a slave to a young man. He told her he loved her. And I was done. For the sake of my children, for the sake of my own sanity, I was done. And then God came. God came to me. Said, Jose, go. Love a woman who's an adulteress, living with her companion. Hosea, love her the way I love the Israelites. Love her. I didn't want to see her. I don't know what you'd call it. I'd call it something like a defining moment. I mean, this was... I'd been God's spokesman. And I was to obey God. I was sent to a nation that was in rebellion, and God asked me to obey, even when it was costly, and I tried to obey, but I didn't know how to do that. It was one thing to take her again, but God hadn't told me to take her again. He'd told me to love her again. And He hadn't just told me to love her again. He told me to love her like He loved us. Thought about that. I thought about the way God had loved us. Thought about the way God had loved Israel. I thought all the way back to Abraham and Isaac and to Jacob and to Joseph. I thought back about how we'd sinned and failed and rebelled, and He kept coming after us and pursuing us and paying the price. How when we were in Egypt, and even after He delivered us, we complained and murmured, and He kept on loving us. I thought about how we'd sinned and chased all these false gods, and He kept bringing us back, and He'd send this person, whether it was a Gideon or a David or a Samuel or whoever it was, He kept bringing us back and bringing us back and bringing us back. And I kept thinking about God's love for me and God's care for me. And it was because God loved me that I had to love my wife, Gomer, who I wanted to write out of my life, and I wanted to move to another town so my children didn't have to see their mother. And I determined that I needed to obey God and not my feelings and not my heart. And I needed to love God because that was the only way I was going to be able to love my wife. It meant I had to buy her. I scraped together some money. I mean, being a prophet in Israel doesn't pay very much. So I scraped together a little bit of money and then got some barley, and I went to the house of her lover. A humiliating moment. He opened the door and he saw me standing there and kind of ducked. I wasn't there to fight him. I was there to find my wife. Said, here it is. Here's the price of... a slave that the law says, I don't have it all in cash. You wouldn't believe how fast he took that money. Gomer told me how much he'd said he loved her, but he took that money pretty fast. That's all I can tell you. And I brought her back. She was legally mine now, not just by marriage, but by purchase. And she had nowhere else to go. I remember the fear in her eyes. And I sat her down and I said, Gomer, I want you to understand something. It's over. I don't want you to see any man anymore. You're going to stay here. You're going to live in my house. We're not going to have sexual relations. Not for a while. I wanted to know. I hadn't brought her back to use her. I brought her back to win her. And then I did what God had told me he was doing with the nation of Israel. I wooed her. I enticed her. I arranged things. I took her to places. I spent time with her. I did everything I did, not just to have her as a body in my house, but as a woman who loved me in my arms. I wanted to get remarried. I wanted to, we use the term betrother, in faithfulness and righteousness and love and in justice. I did everything I could think of as a man to win her heart, to seduce her back. And I'll never forget the day she said it. She called me Ishi. I know that may not mean a lot to you, but see, we've got two words in our language for husband. One's the word Baali, my Baal. Just means my husband or my lord or something like that. But every time she said it, I could think of the other Baals. And that's a word that's, it's kind of a legal word. But Ishi, I don't know, what do you use to say my husband? I'll never forget the day she said, my husband. And as we put our arms around one another, all of that love that had been pent up in my heart, all of that love that I wanted to show her, all of that love that I tried to show her, came gushing forth. By the way, we renamed the children. Oh, Jezreel still has the same name. But you know the interesting thing? Jezreel also can mean God scatters seed to grow something new. So when I say his name is Jezreel, I don't say it means God scatters. I say it means God sows. He's raising something new. And I talk to people not about the new thing that God's just done in our family, but the new thing he's going to do for our nation, and there's going to be a harvest of righteousness. And my little girl, her name's now Ruhama. Pitied, loved. Never talk about her as low Ruhama. No, my mercy and my grace, just like God longs his mercy and his grace. And it's not low on me anymore, it's on me. My people, my son, my boy. We're doing well as a family. I wish I could say the same for my nation. People sometimes ask me what my story's about. Well, I think it's the first thing. It's about a faithful love. Sometimes people tell me my love's love of another kind, but I try to tell them it's love of God's kind. Love that doesn't give up, that doesn't quit, that doesn't stop, that pursues and even pays for people who are slaves and reaches out even when there's every reason to write them off. My God's not through with my nation. He's given me a vision that one day my nation's going to come to repentance. He's given me a vision that one day people who don't even know the name of my God are going to know the name of my God, and they're not part of Israel today. They're not God's people, but they're going to be shown mercy and love and grace. And my story is also about forgiving love. Hardest thing I ever had to do was forgive Gomer. The biggest price I paid wasn't those 15 shekels and that barley. That was all the money I had. It was just saying, you're forgiven. You're mine. And I could only do that because I knew that God had forgiven me. I learned a great lesson that forgiving people are forgiven people. And if I've been forgiven, I've got to be forgiving even to people who trample on faithful love. Let me read you some words that I wrote as I ended my book. It's my appeal to my nation. And then God gave me some words to speak. Return, O Israel, to Yahweh your God. Your sins have been your downfall. Take words with you and return to the Lord. Say to him, forgive all our sins and receive us graciously so we may offer the fruit of our lips. Another nation can't save us. We're not going to depend on military. We'll never again say our gods to what our hands have made. Oh God, in you the fatherless find compassion. And then God told me to write how he responds to people who come. I will heal their waywardness and love them freely. My anger has turned away from them. I'll be like dew to Israel. He will blossom like a lily. I will answer him and care for him. I am like a green pine tree. Your fruitfulness comes to me. Who's wise? He'll realize these things. Who's discerning? He'll understand them. The ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in them, but the rebellious stumble in them. My God would have me say to you today, my God faithfully loves you. And the price he paid so you would know his love goes far beyond anything that I paid for Gomer. And that God who paid the price is a God who promises forgiveness. And that God who gives us a healing grace in our hearts enables us to forgive others. Oh, great God of love and faithfulness and forgiveness. Whether we here today are more like my wife Gomer or more like me, help us to see you and to know your healing grace.